The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Tensions remain high as the United States 60-day ceasefire agreement with Iran set to expire today.
Chief Foreign Correspondent Trey Yinks just spoke with President Trump and joins us now from Tel Aviv. Trey.
Yeah, hey guys, good morning. I just got off the phone with President Trump, who discussed the situation with Iran as the 60-day memorandum of understanding expires. The president told Fox News Iran should raise the white flag of surrender. He went on to say, I have no time schedule. I'm not in a hurry. The president indicating that the U.S. naval blockade is continuing to put new economic pressure on the Iranian regime, despite what the Iranians have said publicly. He said they're good poker players, but they're dying, and that the midterms in the United States have nothing to do with the president's thinking.
Yeah, so I can't go into the details of it, but I will say that the conversations between the U.S. government and different areas of the Iranian government at all areas is probably more robust than it's maybe ever been. And so there's been a lot of good dialogues, which I think is very, very helpful, right? You can't make deals with each other if you don't understand each other. You have to exchange views. There's really not a lot of trust between America and Iran after all these years of not having these relations and dialogues. But obviously they're engaging in a very strong way, and that's quite positive, but we're not there yet on an understanding, and President Trump's going to be very patient. He doesn't want to rush to a deal. He'll make the right deal when the right deal is ready, but we are having very positive and active conversations.
When you see what's happening with Iran right now, do you get the sense that Iran is even interested in doing a deal right now? Because according to the Wall Street Journal, they've accelerated their new missile production, their drone production. They've asked the Houthis, and they've gotten involved in the Red Sea. It seems like this is the Iran script. And in that script, peace talks don't exist.
Yeah, it's a great question. And Jared Kushner told Fox News yesterday, at this point, the Iranians are not making a deal. But he said deals are difficult and that the president often wants what many would describe as an impossible deal, but it's still the deal he's going to pursue. And so U.S. negotiators, including Jared Kushner, remain optimistic about the possibility of future conversations with the Iranians. They indicated that talks are still taking place indirectly behind the scenes. Now, I asked the president about these parallel talks that are taking place between Iran and Oman about control of the Strait of Hormuz. And the president told Fox News, if Oman gets in the way, we'll bomb the S out of them.
You met with Hamas officials yesterday. Do you think they're genuine about peace?
I mean, they said all the right things, but obviously it's very, very hard to trust, a terrorist organization that committed these terrible atrocities. But we had a very cordial meeting and they said all the right things. And so we're going to give them a chance to perform, but it's going to have to be based on actions and steps. And I hope it will be true.
The president also spoke about U.S. ally Israel. Remember, his son-in-law and top negotiator Jared Kushner is in the region. He met yesterday with Khalil al-Haya, the current Hamas chief in Egypt. And the president said that they have a different channel with Hamas and that ultimately they are giving up their guns, talking about the demilitarization of the Gaza Strip. I asked the president about the upcoming Israeli elections in October, and President Trump told Fox News, I think it's most appropriate for me to stay out of Israeli elections, but I may endorse somebody.
It's pretty obvious that more and more distance is being created between the U.S. and Israel. And meanwhile, as you heard, lots and lots of talk, lots of dialogue with Hamas, with Iran. I think Jared Kushner said it's more robust than it's ever been. And we'll play some clips in a moment of a top Iranian official just absolutely mocking the United States, taunting the U.S. But there's lots and lots of talking, as you've been hearing on this show. There's lots of talking over the last many months, 60 days on from the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding. We'll play a montage of all the happy talk surrounding that a couple months ago. We played some of that on this show, but a lot to get to for another update on the Iran saga. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at thetrumpet.com or at the Rumble channel or the YouTube channel as well. You can email the show, td@thetrumpet.com. Right at the start of that cold open, you heard President Trump say to one of the Fox reporters, Iran should raise the white flag. That's what they should do. This is what they should do. It's not exactly the kind of talk. Speaking of talk, it's not the kind of talk that you heard at the start of this conflict, where we were going to win, they were going to unconditionally surrender, and that's it. End of story. That's not exactly happening now. Going back to that memorandum of understanding, listen to this from the last couple months, clip 12.
Signed, sealed, and delivered. President Trump is wrapping up his high-stakes G7 meeting in France by signing the Iran Memorandum of Understanding. He did it himself instead of waiting for JD to do it on Friday. This happening moments ago, just around midnight in Versailles.
President Trump just says that he thinks it is common sense that will prevent them from charging tolls after 60 days because they don't want to have the bombs dropped on their head.
Bomb Iran if they don't comply, but there's nothing enforceable in the deal itself. Is that correct?
Doesn't have to be.
We do think they're negotiating, at least so far, in good faith, and we're making some progress. Hopefully we'll continue to make progress. The president will be in a position where he can endorse the agreement, but obviously that's still TBD.
If it doesn't get done in 60 days, that's all right. We go back to bombing. You know, I don't want to do that because it's so good. But we might have to, because we're never going to let them have a nuclear weapon. But they've agreed not to, and you'll see that very clearly in the agreement.
Okay, President Trump, you've got the greatest military in the world. Let's see if you can do a better job. I think Israel's done a fantastic job and a very, very surgical job.
I have no idea if peace with Iran comes out of this, but I know that all these concessions Democrats are complaining about, they're not coming to fruition anytime soon.
It's a very strong deal. Nobody knows what it is, but it's very strong. And most people seem to be very happy. Who's really happy is the market.
So that's what he's trying to do, reduce the price of oil, reduce inflation, reduce the cost of food that's hung up because of fertilizer costs coming out of the Gulf and other places, and present the American taxpayer with a strong stock market, strong capital markets worldwide, and a booming economy. If he can do that, he's got a chance of winning this election in November.
That's after a memorandum of understanding. They didn't even have the deal 2 months ago. These past 2 months, that's when they were supposed to hammer out the deal. And so the 60-day memorandum, it expires today. This is from Al Monitor. It says, Iran will shift to a fully offensive military posture because efforts to negotiate a permanent end to the war with the U.S. have stalled. It says, outward progress towards peace, talks, and a resumption of oil tanker traffic through the strategic Strait of Hormuz has ground to a halt, threatening to extend the conflict that the U.S. and Israel launched with attacks on February 28th, attacks on Iran. A memorandum of understanding signed in June to end the war had given Iran and the U.S. until Monday to reach a final peace agreement. That was yesterday. It didn't happen. It quickly unraveled, as this article says. Signed on June 17, the memorandum set a 60-day time frame. The agreement, which declared the immediate and permanent termination of military operations on all fronts, quickly unraveled over a dispute about control of the strait, the narrow waterway through which a fifth of global oil and liquefied natural gas flowed before the war. The article is Iran threatens a new offensive. It talks about what he said about Oman. You heard it there in the cold open. If they get in the way, we're going to start bombing Oman. Lots of talk, lots of peace talk, lots of tough talk as well. Lots of talk with profanity, as we've said before. A lot of curse words. Talk and more talk. Kushner met with Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel a day after meeting with the political leader of Hamas in Egypt in a bid to revive the plan. This is for Gaza. Israel's carried out airstrikes and seized more territory in Gaza despite an October ceasefire, while Hamas has refused to give up its weapons. Kushner described the nearly four-hour meeting with Netanyahu as good. And he said about Hamas representatives, you heard it in the cold open, they said all the right things. Hamas has said it agreed to the roadmap, but implementation depends on Israel first meeting its own commitments, including halting attacks and withdrawing. So there's a memorandum of understanding with Hamas now. They agree to lay down their weapons if Israel withdraws, if Israel stops bombarding them. And so it goes, an endless cycle. This is from Fox News, clip 4.
There are reports of more threats from Iran against President Trump and our American warriors in the region. Iran's military reportedly offering a $30,000 bounty for any Iranian citizen who captures or kills a U.S. service member. And a top Iranian lawmaker posted this. The president of the United States, instead of his endless bluffs regarding the Strait of Hormuz, should be thinking about securing his own safety so that he doesn't have to resort to fleeing to a food truck. A reference, obviously, to a secret plane switch in Turkey upon news of possible Iranian assassination plots against the president.
At least the guy's he's got a sense of humor. The Iranian official, I forget who that was. But he should worry about when he has to flee to the food truck. That's regarding the threat on President Trump's life when he was in Turkey. They had to put him on another airplane, and we only found out about a month later. This is the way. Compare it. Just compare it to the way Jared Kushner talks about the Iranian leadership. Look at the way they talk about America. The IRGC leader. This is Iran's military. He's interviewed by PBS. Listen to what his take on this conflict. Clip 5.
Let's talk about this war. Where do you see Iran in this juncture of the war? Do you see yourself as winning? Are you in control?
Certainly, victory is on our side. After the defeat of America's two main objectives, the toppling of the leadership and the breaking up of Iran, we saw confusion and bewilderment in America. It became a war without a strategy. Every two or three days, they announced a new objective. For several nights, they said they want to invade Korg Island. They said they want to open the Strait of Hormuz. They mobilized their battleships. Everything they tried, we can show how we were victorious.
In your view, is it inevitable that Iran has won?
No, we have not yet reached our final objective. This is clear. Up until now, we are victorious. In the future, we will continue to be victorious. The longer this war lasts, the more experience we gain. We had never seen a real war to gain real experience, to learn how to fight with America. In these 5 months, we have learned how. We have also seen how the American military is weaker than what we perceived.
I heard a show this morning where the host talked about President Trump's ace in the hole. How that if he puts the blockade squeeze on the strait and the economy tanks in Iran, the people are going to rise against the mullahs. They're starving. They're dying. Well, you look at their leaders. You listen to what they say. They don't sound like they're speaking from a position of desperation. As I say, they mock the United States. They taunt the United States, the American superpower. A war or a conflict that started in late February. And it was not just America, it was Israel too. Israel's got a lot of firepower. And so these two nations unleashed push-button warfare on Iran. And here we are. Here we are, six months later. And what do we see? This is something really that should embarrass American leaders and diplomats that would sit down across the table with these kinds of individuals and listen to all this nice, happy talk. But here's the reality. We've learned a lot fighting against America. We hadn't fought them before. Now we have. We know how they fight. We've learned how to fight them. That's what he said. And PBS, this is a Western outlet. PBS, government funded. And we sit down with the mullahs. We sit down with the IRGC leader, the head of the military. We let them spout off with their propaganda, with their anti-Americanism, their hatred for America. Here's more from that exchange, clip six.
One of your most effective weapons in this war has been your missiles and your drones. Reports said before the war, you had about 3,000 to 4,000 missiles. How many missiles do you have in your stockpile right now?
First of all, we are not reliant on missiles and drones. If we are victorious, we relied on our faith to be victorious. God is with us.
Why can't Western leaders or American leaders look to God the way these radical Islamists look to their God? In our case, God's not even part of this. God's not even mentioned. We hear a lot about missiles. You cross us, we're going to bomb you. We're going to blow you up. And here they are, looking to their God, a false God at that, but still, they are religious extremists. They're obsessed with their religion. I was saying in class this morning, talking about Herbert Armstrong and his history with God and God's truth, and he said that when he was a little boy, from his early boyhood, he had this craving for understanding. And then Mr. Armstrong said later in his autobiography, he said, this obsession, it carried with me on the way to producing the Plain Truth and building Ambassador College, all of these monumental projects. It sprung from an obsession that Mr. Armstrong had for true religion, for God's truth. Why don't we see more of that in America today? Why is our religion so shallow? Why does God just get a token reference? And then you look at the Gentile world, they're devoted. Oh, yes. They believe this fighting America accelerates the fulfillment of their prophecies. Deuteronomy 28. Verse 25, it says, the Lord shall cause you to be smitten before your enemies. This is the blessings and cursings chapter. It says, and you shall go out one way against them and flee seven ways before them and shall be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth. He's there talking about God guiding them to victory. And meanwhile, you've got America backpedaling or talking about all of this wonderful dialogue, robust dialogue that they have with these people that want to kill Americans, that want to kill Jews. This is more from that IRGC leader speaking to PBS, clip seven.
Israel says Iran wants to build a bomb to destroy Israel. Does Iran want to destroy Israel?
Iran has only one thing to say about occupied Palestine, and this is something our martyred leader has also said. The leadership there must be chosen based on a majority vote by the people who are connected to that land. This will certainly not be done with a nuclear bomb, but we certainly prefer the Zionist regime did not exist. Just like the previous South African regime, an apartheid and white supremacist regime that was discarded by the people, the same thing must happen in Palestine.
The PBS guy seems intrigued. Wow, he's pro-democracy. He just wants the will of the people. And, he wants to see the end of the Zionist regime. A lot of people in the media want that too. They see Bibi as the problem. I'm not going to endorse Bibi. I might endorse someone later, though. It just depends. It's pretty amazing. to see how these people, there's plenty of propaganda, I guess, that's mixed in, but they get on their cameras, their interviews, they speak their mind, they speak from their heart. They tell you what they intend to do. We're learning a lot fighting against America. We're learning how to fight America. We're learning how to beat America. And yet still we bend over backwards, we really do, to try to appease them, to try to put together an impossible deal. Jerusalem Post. Iran pushed to continue the war with the U.S. in order to force a ceasefire on its own terms, Iranian foreign minister said during a conference. We were the ones who refused the ceasefire and continued the war until we reached a point where they, the U.S., agreed to a ceasefire and negotiations on Iran's terms, says this guy. We fought with strength and negotiated with strength, and we won the war, and we won the diplomacy. Well, they're certainly winning the diplomacy. They're certainly winning the peace talks. Mr. Armstrong said that's a struggle America, mighty America, always loses. Even when we were winning wars like World War II, we were losing the peace talks. Now we're losing the wars and the peace talks. And that's been the history since the end of World War II. He was right. Herbert Armstrong said, we've won our last war. America has won its last war. We saw a clip we're going to get into, 9/11, in the weeks ahead. We're coming up to the 25th anniversary. And look at how the world in America changed, the whole world, but look at how America changed. Just since we entered into the last hour, and then you've got these radical Islamist attacks on America, September 11th, 2001. Part of the trailer, it was a Netflix documentary. Part of the trailer talked about how that, you know, those buildings came down and all of these surveillance operations were triggered in the United States. The world changed. Security at airports, that sort of thing. TSA. It's dramatically different. We entered into a new time, but they had a clip in that trailer of the withdrawal from Afghanistan, and the narrator's talking about, you know, 20 years in Afghanistan because of what happened in 9/11. And then this was under Otto Penn. And then the evacuation, Taliban just sweeps across the country, forcibly takes control. And the U.S. is left, well, there was the bombing in Kabul. All of those servicemen and women, 13 of them, I think, just blown up as we were exiting. And the people hanging on planes, jumbo jets, trying to get out of Afghanistan, along with the American military. Embarrassing. A shameful defeat. How could anyone look at that footage and say, yeah, that was a big victory for the U.S.? That was 20 years on from the so-called war against terrorism. And we unleashed some wrath in the end of 2001, early 2002. And what did it result in? What did America win from that? Did it win Afghanistan or Iraq? And now here we are, mired in doom, really, in Iran, trying to find a way out. I guess now trying to starve them into submission. And the leaders of IRGC, the lawmakers, the mullahs, they're taunting America. They're mocking America. That's the Middle East. Then you have Europe. And as I said yesterday, Americans don't care about what's happening in Europe. Americans don't care that Germany's building a new war machine. Americans, they're not concerned about the Holy Roman Empire, the history, Europe's historical roots. Doesn't even faze us. It's not newsworthy. It's not discussed. Except on this program, Deutsche Welle. Germany, Bundeswehr troop numbers reach a 13-year high. The German army or military employed roughly 186 soldiers as of July 31st. Highest in 13 years. We got to build it up. We need more soldiers. We need more armaments. We need more missiles. We need more military leaders. It says by the mid 2030s, Germany aims to recruit some 70,000 more full-time troops than it currently has on retainer to reach a full-time force of around 260,000 plus around 200 reservists. Well, Germany's building. It's building its military. It's building its military machine. It's building its war machine. You've got this other story from Politico about Europeans trying to live without American technology, trying not to be so dependent on American technology, except when it comes to American bombs and that sort of thing. That technology they really want. Germany really wants that. But they're trying not to be dependent on U.S. technology. And of course, you look at all the stories with respect to artificial intelligence, this feature on the latest Trumpet magazine, all in on the AI gamble. It is a gamble. It can be very dangerous. And of course, it can be used for military purposes. And the one that gets to the latest and greatest first, well, that poses a threat to the United States. And you think of the prophecy in Ezekiel 7, the call comes for going to battle and people don't respond to it. People don't respond to it. That's what's coming. I had this in my notes yesterday. I didn't get around to going through it, but it's a Truth Social post the other day. I guess this would be Sunday. Based on my very good relationship with Kim Jong-un, he has a very good relationship with the dictator in North Korea. He says, I'm not happy with the fact that the U.S. has long ago agreed to participate in joint military exercises with South Korea. These exercises are not only costly, with much of these costs paid for by the U.S., as usual, but send a signal that is totally inappropriate and hostile to a country that, as long as Donald J. Trump has been president, has been unthreatening and respectful. North Korea has been respectful. They're unthreatening. And the joint military exercises with a longtime ally, South Korea, that is hostile. According to the president of the United States, that's hostile. North Korea good, South Korea hostile. South Korea belligerent. South Korea and America belligerent. North Korea good, very good friend. You see a pattern here? Hamas, Iran, Kushner, robust dialogue, and now South Korea. South Korea's the bad guy. Because we've got troops there, we're paying for it. And there's truth to that, just like paying for all the bills with NATO. But to come in and just blow it all up and say everyone for himself, is that going to make things better? Listen to this from President Trump in the Oval Office yesterday, clip 8.
When I called recently the president of South Korea, who I like, I think he's very nice, actually. But I called him, I said, would you like to give us a little hand? We don't need help with Iran, but if you'd like, give us a hand with Iran. He said, no, thanks. And I said, what do we have? We have 39,000 soldiers over there guarding you from Kim Jong-un, your next door neighbor, and you're not gonna help us on a very easy military operation in Iran? That's strange. No, we'd rather not get involved. I say, well, why are we involved in helping you? So, and I want to help them, but when you ask somebody, would you like to give us a hand, and they say no thanks, and then we're guarding them from a country and paying ourselves billions of dollars, costing us billions and billions of dollars to protect not only them but other countries. Look at NATO.
We spend hundreds of billions of dollars protecting Europe from Russia. Hundreds of billions, mostly from Russia, but from other things too. And then they say, well, they don't want to get involved with guarding the strait where they get most of their oil. They get 50% of their oil, and they don't want to get involved. Why are we doing it? So all I want is fairness.
And again, a lot of Americans agree with him. That why do we have to pay for everything? You've heard us talk about that before. But this is a dangerous trend where the allies, America's allies, are the ones that, in his mind, are hostile and dangerous and freeloading and, getting everything that they can out of the American superpower. And then the ones that hate us and want to blow us up, there's a lot of hate and hostility coming from our supposed allies too. Okay, so there's that. But then the most belligerent nations and leaders in this world, North Korea, China, Russia, Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, we're pleading with them. We want peace. We want a good deal. We want to give you money. We want money from NATO and we want money from South Korea, but we want to give Hamas money. We want to help. We want to help welcome Iran back into the international community. We want to help rebuild Iran. Look at the direction. I mean, this is shocking, really. The whole world order it's like it's going through this massive earthquake. And a lot of it's brought on by the President of the United States. President Trump's order captures a persistent tension in his foreign policy. This was from the morning brief yesterday. I think Mr. Hilliker wrote this. On one side stands a legitimate demand that allies stop sponging off American power and resources. On the other lies a pattern of belittling long-standing alliances and paying unusual deference to authoritarian leaders like Kim Jong-un. He's a wonderful friend. We have the dialogue with the Iranian leadership is so robust. This has never been better. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. We're going to make an impossible deal. We're going to make the impossible possible. And then eternal peace, just like we were told when the MOU came out. We've reached an understanding. Now the peace deal follows in the next 60 days. Uh-oh, that expired yesterday. And you've got the IRGC leader, the head of the military, on TV, on PBS, saying that we're learning how to fight America. They're losing this war. We've won. Look at what we control. They're the ones that want the ceasefire. We wanted to keep firing. We did, in fact. And now we've got even more favorable terms. Is this really happening? Can they really be this bold, this audacious on our TV platforms? Oh, yes. It really is happening. What a world. The dearth of leadership, even though, as we said, Jeroboam's coming back, and he definitely showed some strength to prevent the devil from even blotting out the name of Israel. But outside of that, look at what we're lacking in Israel. The nations of Israel, I mean. Ephraim, Manasseh, Judah. And now we can't even give an endorsement for the rising lion in Judah? No, because he's a bad guy. He's impossible to work with. He's escalating tension. So create distance from Bibi and reach out to North Korea, Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, and encourage the German war machine to rebuild. We need that too for the safety of the world, you see? The dearth of leadership, Isaiah chapter 3. There's a piece in the New York Post. What explains the massive male malaise? What is wrong with male leadership, with men? It made me, when I saw this one this morning, it made me think of that. I think we had a segment or maybe an article we produced back in 2010. Well, that would have been before this show. So it was probably more for the website. But it came out, I think it was in the American Spectator, The End of Men. So you've got the end of history, okay? We've gotten there. You've got the end of reading, and that's not good. And then what else? The end of men. Wow. What a world. The end of men? The end of male leadership? That's right. As if society, as if this world wasn't bad enough. The common narrative about the troubles facing young men goes like this. A growing number are failing in school, not working or studying, not dating or forming families, and not leaving their children or not leaving their childhood bedrooms. Is this a sign of a happy, healthy, safe society? They're checked out from social life. Their mental health is poor. Their habits are bad. Video games, pornography, gambling, and their views are extremist. What happened to America's men? I've been waiting, by the way, to do a segment on gambling. You can't even turn on sports radio without hearing about gambling and low testosterone, by the way, that as well. What's happening to men? What's happening to our young men? Addicted to things like gambling and marijuana and not working. Addicted to video games, not reading, not working, not producing a family, not interested in marriage. For only the third time in U.S. history, more women are working than men. What? Crucially, the other two times were both this century, after 2008, the financial meltdown, and in 2020, the lockdowns. So you have the financial meltdown and more women rise to the top. Then you've got COVID, that nightmare, and more women rise to the top. And then now today, who knows what's motivating it today? I think it's just the trend line that we've seen this century. Only the third time in U.S. history. This is from Conservative Daily News. That last one was the New York Post. It says in the mid-1950s, 97.4% of prime-age men, that's age 25 to 54, participated in the labor force. Over 97% participated in the labor force. In July 2026, that number was 89%. Put another way, the share of men in their prime working years outside the labor force has risen from roughly 1 in 38 to more than 1 in 9. 1 in 9. Not working. Yeah, 25 to 54, the prime working age of life in America, the land of opportunity, the land of blessings and abundance. Not working. Back to the New York Post, it says most young men have worthy goals, including marriage, children, and financial independence. They value belonging, relationships, and respect. It says on the one hand, they have a sense for what a full life might look like, complete with a loving and productive family. On the other hand, they are not living that life or even moving toward that goal. They kind of know in their heart of hearts, this is what success means. Building a family, having children, raising them in the way that they should go. I talked about just how weighty and sobering that responsibility is in class this morning. How many people take it seriously? How many men are engaged as fathers, as role models, as productive members of society, the community? How many of them are studying their Bibles? How many of them are teaching their children the way of the Bible? God's way, a more excellent way. The New York Post says, many young men do not see a direct relationship between hard work and getting ahead. They're not willing to put in the work. They want to get ahead, but they want it to be easy. God says the way of God, the way of Jesus Christ, it's the straight and narrow way. It's difficult. It's rocky. It's bumpy. It's challenging. There's twists. There's turns. You've got to show drive. You've got to show some perseverance. You've got to have goals. You've got to be goal-oriented. You've got to educate yourself. You've got to be healthy and energetic. So we're studying in the life and work of Herbert W. Armstrong. We're studying his life, what he taught, what he did, how he acted. As I said this morning, everything about him, his personality, his energy, his vitality, his strength, his character, how he taught, how he got himself out of the way so that God could write and teach through him. The ambition that he had, the fact that he craved understanding and he left no stone unturned in his pursuit of the truth. He loved his Bible. He was a man of prayer. Those are some good topics to study, I'd say. No, that's what I told the students this morning. What a blessing to be able to go through that kind of content when it's so desperately needed. It's gone. So much of that is gone from this world. It's gone from our nations. They know how to get ahead, or they at least want to get ahead, but they're not willing to do what's necessary to get there. A large majority of men, 73%, believe that in recent decades it has become harder to know what it is to be a man. We've got a wonderful book called Biblical Manhood. Biblical man. What does the Bible say about manhood? What does the Bible say about the man's role? What does the Bible, there it is. What does the Bible say about a man's role in marriage and family? What does the Bible say about the father? What do the commandments say about obeying and honoring the father? There's a lot in there, I guess. There's a lot of Bible passages that pertain to this subject. 23% of young men gamble daily, and 27% watch porn daily. These habits are associated with greater loneliness and depression. So the more you gamble, the more you're into porn, the more lonely and depressed you are. It's a vicious, vicious cycle. And it's destroying. It's destroying men. The end of men is here. Interestingly, it says the most commonly cited celebrity role models were Barack Obama and LeBron James, two hardcore radical leftists. More young men said they looked up to these two than said they looked up to a religious leader. Andrew Tate came in at a worrying 31%. These are the male role models, you see. Not Jesus Christ, not Herbert Armstrong, certainly not. Not the Apostle Paul, who wrote about marriage and family in Ephesians 5 and Colossians 3. No, we've got, the world has its role models. And those role models, they're into raunchy topics. They're into worldliness. They're into money and fame and materialism. They really inspire the young generation, I guess. The celebrities. Somebody said on the radio the other day that Spider-Man, what have we had, like 8, 9 versions of that just in my lifetime? Is that possible? That Hollywood has to recycle the storyline that many times with the latest, greatest actor this time around? Worldwide, it's made $2 billion. We can't get enough of it. The world, talking about obsessed, the world's obsessed with entertainment and celebrity. Not with seeking understanding. No, no. Not with biblical manhood. Certainly not. Obsessed with worldliness. Now that, it says it in 2 Timothy 3, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. We love pleasure more than God. What does that say about our world? What does that say about our society? What does that say about our nations? What does that say about our future? When you love pleasure more than you love God, you are on a very dangerous course that's going to end in a collision, a devastating crash. Obviously, 43% of young men agreed with the appraisal. I am inclined to think I'm a failure. And so there you go. I'm a failure. I'm not doing anything. I'm not a real man. And that's just the way it is. Only about 60% of our respondents report a consistently present father. No father, no men. No father, no role model. We have a book, a booklet. I mentioned the book, Biblical Manhood. There's another one. My father wrote this back in the late 1990s, Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. There is a conspiracy, and it's orchestrated by Satan the devil. My father says, we hear a great deal about conspiracies today. Our people almost seem conspiracy obsessed. But the greatest and most damaging conspiracy is the one against fatherhood. And very few people understand it or what deadly consequences it will have in our society. And he cites some disturbing statistics. He goes through some articles that appeared at the time, late 90s. Deconstruction of the Essential Father. The researchers that produced that piece challenged one of the core institutions of our culture, fatherhood. More or less, fathers, as we've known and loved them, are obsolete. The article makes numerous breathtaking assertions, but basically the researchers say that fathers aren't essential to the well-being of children. These are the educators. These are the societal leaders. These are the ones that go to the Ivy League universities. And then they come out and they put together some research and a study that says, hey, guess what? We don't need fathers. We don't need men. In fact, men are the problem. The reason the world is chaotic and violent and we can't get along and there's wars and there's rumors of war is because of men. We just need more women. Heterosexual marriage isn't necessary to produce healthy, well-adjusted children. So a happy marriage doesn't have anything to do with how well-adjusted those children are when they grow up. They couldn't be more wrong. Upside down. Tomorrow's World, 1970. It's been the devil's plan to pervert even the meaning of the word father. Today, people use that term about God, yet become very offended when told the plain truth of God's divine purpose. They can't believe that humans are destined to be literally born sons of God. They can't believe it. They might read through or glance at the New Testament over and again, seeing Father, Son, Jesus praying to the Father, talking to the Father. Father, Son, family. If you add Ephesians 3, Ephesians 5, Colossians 3, and then tell them God is a family. What? Are you serious? You believe that's blasphemy. There's a conspiracy against fathers, God the Father most especially, God the Father above all. Satan wants to blot him out of our society. Satan wants to erase his role. Satan wants to blind this world to the God family vision, the God family purpose. And he's had quite a lot of success as the God of this world. 2 Corinthians 4 brings that out. He's blinded the minds of men to the truth of the gospel. And so we continue groping in the dark. When Jesus came to the earth, it says in Conspiracy Against Fatherhood, he plainly revealed the fatherhood of God. Those who heard him speak should have received his message with joy and understanding, since they had been prepared by the writings of the Old Testament. However, they refused to believe Jesus' words and accused him of blasphemy. You can see that in John 10. It's in the Gospels. They accused Jesus Christ, the Son of God, they accused him of blasphemy for talking about the God family vision. My father says, if you have never known a proper relationship with a physical father, it will be more difficult for you to have a right relationship with your spiritual father. You'll have to learn now the things you should have learned in your relationship to a physical father. You'll have to play catch up. It's not impossible to establish a close, intimate bond with your spiritual father, even if you've had no physical father around for most of your upbringing. It's not impossible, but it's made more difficult. You look at that Isaiah 3 prophecy, the dearth of leadership, and then you get down to verse 12 where it talks about children oppressing society and women ruling. And guess who's not even mentioned in that prophecy, in that verse? The men. The husbands, the fathers, they've gone missing. They're not mentioned. They're not succeeding. They're not leading. They're not teaching. They're failing. And how many more articles do we need to tell us where we are as a society? As an Israelite nation, the end of men, that's where we are. The trumpet, it's been around for 30-some years. We had all kinds of articles in the 1990s about how our boys are lost, how that there's a conspiracy against fatherhood, the end of men. What's wrong with the family? Why is it upside down? And of course, all those articles based on passages like Isaiah 3, just like God prophesied it to be, were there. Were there. Luke 16. Well, how much time do I have left? It's just a sad, sad story to see it playing out. And most people have no understanding of what the truth of the Bible is. They don't get into biblical manhood. But even for those who aren't very religious, just common sense things like having a plan, the seven laws of success, having a goal, having some education to go and pursue that goal, being in good physical health, showing some drive, some resourcefulness, some perseverance. Even those first six, if you don't have the contact with God, I mean, to get up early, to shut the screen off, to avoid viewing pornography, to not getting entangled in gambling, just some of those things. What if all young men tried to carry out that kind of a to-do list each day? Think about how much more productive and fruitful and successful they would be in the material sense, but still, you can take it to another level entirely if you start digging into the conspiracy against fatherhood and you start digging into biblical manhood, and above all, if you start digging into the truth of the Bible and looking at the example of Jesus Christ, a real man, quite unlike the images that you see in this world today, they're supposed to be him. No, the God of the Bible, the Jesus Christ of the Gospels, he was a real man, a masculine man, a leading man, a powerful man, a healthy man, a disciplined man. And God says to our young men, follow in his steps. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving show in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.